Connecticut.
Uh-huh.
Connecticut, speaking on stability conditions and birational geometry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, about stability condition on freefall. So this is I'll be reporting on joint work with Aaron Bertram, Emmanuele Macri, and Yuki Lomotono. And so, I mean, basically what you're doing is you're giving a conjectural construction of stability condition on free falls. And really the main thing I want to do is to try to convince you that the conjecture that our construction relies on itself is very interesting, or possibly even more interesting than the original problem. And so, I mean, we know that given X, the smooth projective variety, then there is the space of Bertram stability conditions. But somehow, I mean, from at least with regards to the motivation from physics, really the most interesting case would be the case where would be where X is a smooth Calabi-Yau threefold. But there's really no example known. So no example known. And so what I'm going to explain is a conjectural construction that would give stability conditions for any smooth projective threefold. And the the conjecture that it relies on is somehow has many interesting examples and also has interesting applications to birational geometry, more specifically to Fujita's conjecture. So, I mean, maybe I should start with the prime example. So, I mean, I don't want to define what a Bertram stability condition is, but so I want to. So instead, I want to give the prototypical example, namely when X is a curve and F a coherent sheaf, then we define the central charge of F. So this is always a complex number to be minus the degree of F plus I times the rank of F. And this is contained in this semi-closed upper half plane. So I mean the rank is never negative, and when it's zero, then the degree is positive. So it's contained in this half plane. And then F is so we define that F is stable if for all n subsheaves. Sorry, let me say semi-stable. If for all subsheaves F, so if you draw the picture of Z of F and C prime of F, then there are basically two possibilities. C of F prime is on this side or on this side, and we want that C of F prime is contained in this side. And I mean, of course, that's just a redrawing with a nice picture of classical slope stability. And then we extend this to the derived category by saying that E in dB of X is semi-stable if and only if E is isomorphic to the shift of a semi-stable sheaf. So this is the complex concentrated in degree minus zero in degree minus n, which has here f and zeros otherwise, and f is a semi-stable sheaf. And some of the two ingredients that we put into this here is the central charge So the two ingredients are given by an abelian subcategory of the bounded derived category, so which has to be the part of a bounded T structure. And Z, I mean, Z is additive on short exact sequences, so really it's a group homomorphism from the K group of the derived category. And really the main property is this positivity property that I wrote down here. So so that if I have an object in A, then Z of E is contained in this semi-closed upper half plane. And then, I mean, the other thing that I needed that's really the input from the classical slope stability here is that we have Hardenauer Zim infiltrations. Okay, but somehow for threefolds, even just, I mean, let me, I'll basically forget about this condition and just focus on this condition. I mean, this is a very subtle positivity property. So for example, when X is a surface and A is just coherent sheaves on the surface, then it's never possible to satisfy this positivity condition. And more generally, if you look at the space of stability conditions on a surface and look which central charge are possible with some additional constraints, then this basically knows everything about the question. So given the polarization of the surface, what are the possible churn classes for which there exist semi-stable objects? I mean, this space really, just this positivity property really knows a lot about churn classes, say, of slope-stable vector bundles in the surface case. Okay, and so, I mean, find Z and A for threefolds. And one, I should maybe also add that one would like the Z to be defined over Q, because in practice that's really the main ingredient that's used to prove the existence of Hardenauer Zim infiltrations. Okay, and so I mean, it's known basically by just looking at physics paper and looking at the formulas, one knows for, so now I'm switching to the case where x is a threefold. So we know that the central charge should be given by so minus term 3 of E plus I omega term 2 of E plus omega squared over 2 churn 1 of E minus I omega cubed over 6 churn 0 of E. So, I mean, this is a bit simplified from the formulas you see in physics papers, and the main simplifications, I mean, there are no quantum corrections in this formula and there are no Todd class, and I mean, the motivation for the simplification is maybe mostly coming from the case of surfaces. So if I did the equivalent omega is an ample polarization. If I did the equivalent on surfaces, then I always get a stability condition with this central charge. Okay, and but what is here? There's no watch here. Does anybody have a watch? No. Okay. Okay, so okay, so the I mean, what we What we do is we construct a candidate for such an A as a double tilt of coherent sheaves. I'll explain what that means. And conjecture that this will produce a stability condition. And the, so let me start with the construction. So maybe so the next 20 minutes I will maybe be a little bit technical, and then later I will, because I really want to state the conjecture that we have precisely, and then later I'll go to applications and the questions that this is related to. And so it's basically a two-step process. I start with coX. And let me also add a B field. So omega is a polarization. And B is just any divisor class. And I use this to define a twisted churn character, which is just e to the minus b times the original churn character. So whenever I write churn I twiddle, then it means the ith component of this part over here. And then we start with classical slope stability. So I define mu omega b of f to be omega squared churn 1 twiddle of f divided by omega cubed churn 0 twiddle of f. So when, of course, this only makes sense for sheaves of positive rank. But then we just set it to plus infinity for rank of f equal to 0. And so maybe I should, I wanted to do add a picture of this. So I mean, if you look at the central charge and you imagine omega being large, then of course these are the two dominant terms of the central charge. So let me make here a schematic picture. So, I mean, the central charge counts omega cubed churn 0 of f in this direction, omega squared churn 1 of f, or twiddle f, in this direction, omega churn 2 of f in this direction, and churn 3 of f in this direction. And so if you imagine omega being large, then these two terms dominate. And some of the asymptotically, the direction of the central charge for f is determined by the slope. So this, and then basically we just add, since this doesn't work for torsion sheaves, we add this this definition: the slope is plus infinity for torsion sheaves. And so with this definition, we have Hadamard Zimmermann filtrations. So I mean, then we define slope stability in the usual way. So whenever a sheaf is slope semi-stable, when for all subsheaves the slope is at most as big as the slope of f, and then for this notion we still have Hadamard-Zimmermann filtration. So every sheaf f has filtration 0 equal f0 into f1 and so on into fn equal f with so that the quotients are semi-stable. And the slopes are decreased. So mu of f1 modulo f0 is bigger than mu of f2 modulo f1, and so on. Okay, so I mean, if F is not torsion free, then F1 is just a maximal torsion subsheaf in this filtration and has slope infinity. Okay, so and so in a way, this is the stability just defined by using the contributions of these three here, of these two contributions here, omega cubed term 0 and omega squared term 1. And somehow the next goal is to define a notion of stability that also uses the second Chern character. So next step also use omega Chern 2 of F. So basically, I want a stability condition where the slope is basically defined by the phase of Z bar of F, which is just so I omega Chern 2 of F plus omega squared over 2 Chern 1 of F minus I omega cubed over 6 Chern 0 of F. And let me also draw a picture of this one. Namely, what happens if I want to make a plot where I plot so the bar of E of F divided by the rank of F. So dividing by the rank is just a normalization which doesn't change the phase, and I want this only for F slope stable. And so where can these points lie? Well, it turns out that using Bogomolov-Giesecke inequality, so using and the Hodge index theorem, it turns out that there is a parabola that all these plots lie below this parabola. I mean, of course, with this normalization, the x coordinate is basically the slope. And then, the Bogomolov-Giesecke inequality says, let me write it down, says that if F is slope stable, then omega Chern 2 of F divided by the rank of F is less than or equal to 1/2 omega times Chern 1 of F squared divided by the rank squared. And then, of course, I can use the Hodge index theorem to replace omega times Chern 1 squared with omega squared Chern 1 squared divided by a normalization factor. So then I get omega squared Chern 1 squared divided by this rank of F squared omega cubed. And so here on the right-hand side, I essentially have the slope squared. And so this shows that omega Chern 2 of F is bounded by a quadratic term in terms of the slope. And so in this Z bar of E, this term is bounded by a quadratic term in the slope. And this term is just a constant in this normalization. So that's where I get this parabola from. And maybe it's also worth pointing out what this picture implies a little bit with respect to stability with respect to this Z bar, so which is a notion I will make precise in a second. So, I mean, if I have a sheaf here that is on, where this point is exactly on the parabola. So for example, when omega is the first Chern class of a line bundle, I could just take a L to some tensor power. Then this will still be semi-stable. I mean, anything that has bigger slope will also have bigger phase. But if I have something where one of these inequalities is really a large strict inequality. So say here I have a sheaf with big discriminant so that the Bogomolov-Giesecke inequality is really a very strict inequality. and I look at the phase of this one, then this can be destabilized by a sub-object of smaller slope with respect to this classical slope. So I mean, this object, let's say this is f, and this is f prime. So I mean, this has smaller slope, so it's not destabilizing with respect to classical slope stability, but it has bigger phase with respect to the c bar, and so it can destabilize here. Okay, and so produce a stability condition where the phase depends on the c bar of f. Now I really have to go into the derived category. So I define a torsion pair . So this is really following the surface case as first done in Tom's paper for stability condition on K3s. So I define two subcategories of coherent sheaves. And so T are here, let me add some notation here. So omega max of S is the slope of the first Hadamardian concentration factor, and mu min is the minimal slope appearing here in the Hadamardian concentration. So T are basically those sheaves with big slope. So these are E, where the mu min is bigger than zero. So in other words, it's the extension closed subcategory that's generated by all slope stable sheaves with slope bigger than zero. And F is the complementary part, where this mu max is less than or equal to zero. And so what does it mean to be a torsion pair? This first means that there are no morphisms from anything in T to anything in F, which basically just results from the fact that if I have two slope stable sheaves and this has bigger slope than this one, then there are no morphisms. And the other one is that for any for any coherent sheaf, there is a short exact sequence. 0 goes to the torsion part of E, goes to E, goes to the torsion free part of E. So where T of E is an object in here, and F of E is an object in here. And this just comes from basically truncating the Hadamard Sim infiltration. So this T of E is just one of the FIs, just where before the slopes start becoming non-positive. And then, we tilt at this torsion pair. So be an abelian subcategory of dB of x. So I could write it, for example, as the extension closure of the torsion-free part shifted by one in the derived category. I can also think of it as the complexes where just two cohomology sheaves are non-zero. So h minus 1 is contained in f. h 0 of e is contained in t. And everything else is zero. Hi of E is zero otherwise. Or I can just think of it as the category of two-term complexes, where the kernel of D is in F, and the co-kernel is in T. And in other words, here I have a four-term short-exact sequence, kernel D goes to E minus 1, goes to E0, goes to co-kernel D. So this such an element corresponds to, such an object corresponds to an element in X2 of some object in of the co-kernel and the kernel. So in other words, it comes from an element in X2 between a sheafed big slope and a sheafed small slope. Okay, and so so basically from this picture over here, it follows that if E is in this V, then the Z bar of E is contained in the semi-closed right half plane. Because I mean I've taken everything here on the left-hand side, anything over here, I've shifted by one, which corresponds to multiplying all the churn classes with minus one. So I mean, this gets moved over here. And so the result is really something that's on the right-hand side. So the only problem is that there still could, so the reason that this is not yet a bridge transferability condition is that there could still be something sent to zero, namely skyscraper sheaves of point get sent to zero. I haven't used the third churn character yet. And so to go around this, we, instead of saying this produces a stability condition, we again define something like a slope. So for E in this abelian subcategory B, we set nu omega B to B. So basically the slope of this complex number, so the imaginary part of Z bar of Z bar of E divided by omega squared churn 1 twiddle of E. Whenever that's defined, or plus infinity when if omega squared churn 1 twiddle of E is equal to 0. And I mean, using this notion of slope, we get a notion of stability on this category, and we call this hill stability. Okay, and okay, and so let me state now that the main conjecture, unfortunately, this is really now should be seen as an analogous statement to the Bogomolov-Giesecke inequality. Namely, our conjecture states the following: so if E in B is still stable with nu omega B of E equals 0. So in other words, this is equivalent to saying that omega cubed over 6 churn 0 is equal to omega churn 2. Then there is the following linear inequality for the third churn character. So churn 3 of E is less than or equal to omega squared over 18. Times churn 1 of E. Okay, and so I mean basically the last part, the last half of the talk, I'll try to convince you that this is an extreme, would be an extremely interesting inequality if it were true. Okay, so let me maybe start by explaining how the conjecture implies the existence of Bridgeson stability conditions. Then we do exactly the same game that we did from going from slope stability to tilt stability. We do this once more. So maybe what we do is we let, again, now we let us define a Porton pair of subcategories in B exactly the same way as before. You mean, so this is those with generated by tilt stable objects whose tilt slope nu is bigger than zero. So in other words, I could write nu min is bigger than zero. And here I take those where the nu max is less than or equal to zero. And then I define A omega comma B to be the extension closure of F prime shifted by 1 and T prime. And what does this do? I mean, basically by construction, I have made sure that the if E is in A omega B, then just by construction, I have ensured that Z of E is contained in the closed upper half plane. Because the imaginary part, remember, the imaginary part being positive basically corresponds to nu being positive. I mean, B was constructed in such a way that here this omega squared term 1 is always, can never be negative. And so if the slope is positive, then the imaginary part of C bar of E is positive, and then the imaginary part of Z of E is positive. And then the conjecture really implies that it cannot lie on the positive real line. So that it's not in the real part. Right, to equal to zero. And of course so over here I still have the center charge. So remember the center charge was minus term 3 of E plus omega squared over 2 term 1 of E. So really to show that this is in the positive real line instead of this over 18 in the conjecture, I could have said it's less than omega squared over 2 term 1 of E. I mean, to produce stability condition, our conjecture is actually too strong.
So you know you have Hadamard Zeeman filtration.
Yeah, so we know we have Hadamard Zeeman filtration, but really maybe I should. So I mean this first part is all joined with Emanuele and Yukinobu. I mean, the first proposition is really that the conjecture implies Bridgeson stability condition. Yeah, basically, since everything is defined over Q, the only thing we need is some finiteness property for this hard A, and this works out. So, I mean, here are a couple of, all of this is also joint work with Emanuele and Yukinobu. So, I mean, where does this 1 over 18 come from? So, where does omega squared over 18 come from? Well, I mean, the observation is that if E is a slope-stable vector bundle, wait, so let's say that omega is the first term class of a line model. Really, I would only need that it's proportional, but for simplicity, let me now always assume that omega is the first term class of a line model. Now, if I, with respect to this polarization, if I have a slope-stable vector bundle such that C1 of E is proportional to omega, and the discriminant is equal to 0, so let me say Bogomolov-Giesecke is an equality. Then this E is stable with respect to tilt stability. So E is tilt stable, and conjecture is an equality. So where does this come from? Basically, if you have such a vector bundle, then all the higher churn characters are determined by churn 1 and churn 2. So, I mean, basically, this goes back to the theorem due to Simpson, that if you have a slope-stable vector bundle with churn 1 equals 0 and churn 2 equals 0, then all the higher churn characters are 0. And by going to some finite cover, one can reduce this to the situation. And, I mean, what are such vector bundles really? These are called projectively, also called projectively flat vector model. And E is projectively flat. So there's a metric so that the connection is completely contained in some U1 subgroup, in the U1 subgroup. And really the prime example is are push forwards along unramified covers. So push forwards of line bundles along unramified covers. So for example, for abelian threefolds, there are really a lot of these. Okay, and so, I mean, why can we even hope to get such a strong inequality? I mean, of course, there's a big history of trying to find analogous statements to Bogomolov-Giesecke inequality for slope-stable vector bundles and higher churn characters. And our statement is much, much stronger than anything that's even possible for slope-stable vector bundle, and the reason is, of course, that slope-stable vector bundles can become unstable with respect to tilt stability. And so these, I mean, if you look at these papers from the 80s or 90s where they have, say, big churn 3, then this all come from vector bundles where the discriminant is fairly large, so it's way below this, the picture is way below this parabola. And then the next proposition is that, so let me state this over here. I mean, we do have a little bit of evidence for the conjecture holds for x equal p3, b equals 0, and omega less than square root of 3 times the Hyperplane class. So I mean, this condition is maybe not so important, so it's just to simplify the computations, but this is really an important restriction without which we couldn't prove this. And I mean, in a sense, this theorem is highly non-surprising from the derived category standpoint, because I mean, we know there exists a stability condition on P3 using exceptional collections and basically Baylinson's Baylinson's construction. And so basically what we are doing here is we are identifying the Bridgson stability condition that we really want to construct with one of these algebraic stability conditions coming from Kruver stability condition. But somehow it turns out that the identification is still something non-trivial. And in particular, I mean, if you think about it again in terms of vector bundles on P3, it's a non-surprising statement. So all vector bundles where this inequality is violated will become unstable with respect to tilde stability. So it also holds for so if P is a divisor proportional to omega, then the conjecture holds for F restricted to D. So in other words, if I have a sheaf on a divisor that's the restriction of a globally defined sheaf, then the conjecture holds. And what goes in here, I mean, the ingredients are A, the Bogomolov-Giza inequality on D. But it turns out that this is not enough. So this is the Bogomolov-Giza inequality on D. And then, I mean, I have the short exact sequence F twisted by minus D goes to F restricted by D, and I can twist this around and get an exact triangle in the derived category. And it turns out that this sometimes also destabilizes. So again, it's a little bit more non-trivial than the statement than you first expect. I mean, somehow you would first expect that on the divisor we have Bogomolov-Giza, then certainly this will imply this, but it turns out it's not enough. So here's maybe my favorite example. Maybe if you take X and P4 a hypersurface, and E to be the ideal sheaf of a curve. Twisted by O of 1, then E is still stable. Okay, now if you look at the conjecture, I mean, of course, we know the rank, we know the degree, we can compute it turn 2 in terms of the degree of the curve. And using Hirzebruch-Riemann-Roch, we can compute turn 3 in terms of the genus of the curve. So in other words, somehow this inequality relates to something between term 3, between the genus and the degree. And of course, I mean, somehow the oldest inequality in algebraic geometry, the Castelnuovo inequality. So I mean, that's g less than or equal to 1/2 d minus 1, d minus 2. It turns out this implies the conjecture. But already when X is a complete intersection, so if X and some Pn plus 3 is a complete intersection, then what we would need for this inequality is a stronger version of Castelnuovo-Mumford, of the Castelnuovo inequality, which seems completely plausible to me, but which seems to be unknown. So, I mean, why is it plausible? I mean, there are papers of the form, so take a curve in P3 that lies on a hypersurface of some given degree, then you can improve the constant here. And here we would need something similar for when C is a curve on a complete intersection. And as I said, I mean, the inequality looks very plausible to me, but I'm pretty sure it's not in the literature, and it's that doesn't seem to be known.
Is the 18 sharp here in this example, or do you get some
better? No, it's not sharp. It's I mean, actually, it's never sharp except for, basically, it's never sharp except for these projectively flat vector bundles. So. Okay, so finally, I want to justify the n-birational geometry in the title. And now, the rest is joined with Aaron Bertram and Emanuele and Yuki Novo. Maybe it's known for surfaces that Bogomolov-Giesecke inequality implies, for example, Rider theorem, which implies the Fujita type statement. So what are Fujita type statements? I mean, basically, Fujita's conjecture asks the question, so when are adjoint line bundles globally generated or very ample? When is Kx tensor L globally generated or very ample? Of course, we all know how to check this. So we check whether we want to check whether H1 of Kx tensor L tensor an ideal sheaf of one or two points is non-zero. So here Z is a subscheme of length, a zero-dimensional subscheme of length one or two in this report. And then, of course, using shared duality, this is the same thing as X2 between L tensor IZ and OX. So here we have an element in X2 between something of bigger slope and something of smaller slope, which means that if we cope up our parameters correctly, such an element, sorry, I forgot the dual, of course, such an element will produce an object in our category B. So we said omega equal T L, that's proportional to L, and G equals L over 2. So if psi produces an object E in our category B with symmetric cohomology sheaves are OX and L tensor ID. Okay, and then of course, I mean, it's easy to compute the third Chern character of E. This is equal to L cubed over 24 minus the length of Z. And it's also easy to see that the rank is 0 and the Chern 2 twiddle is also equal to 0. Basically, that's the reason to make this choice here. And then, so when omega goes to 0, so in other words, when t goes to 0, then if you look at the inequality, I mean, Chern 3 of E is constant. And the right-hand side goes to 0. So this means that whenever term 3 of E is positive, then this will become unstable. So then E will become unstable if L cubed is bigger than 24 times the length of C. So 24 or 48 in the two cases that interest us. So again, why is this? So I mean, if this is true, then the term 3 is positive, but making the omega squared smaller and smaller, the right-hand side will go to 0 in the conjecture. And then basically by so analyzing the destabilizing factors, I mean, this becomes a kind of a lengthy computation. So analyzing the destabilizing factors, destabilizing sub-objects. Produces the following three theorems. So I mean, the first theorem gives a characterization of a line of an adjoint line bundle to be globally generated or very ample in terms of the intersection numbers. So if L cubed greater than 49 times the length of the, if L dot a, L squared dot a curve is greater than or equal than 6 times the length of the, and L dot integral divisor is greater equal, so this is for effective curve classes, and here I need any integral divisor, so I need this to be bigger than 7 times the length of C whenever it is positive. Then the conjecture, so if we then also assume the conjecture, then it follows that this cohomology group that I wrote down, that H1 of Kx tensor L tensor IV is equal to 0. So I mean, basically this object cannot exist. And then, I mean, there's a and this is an analogy to Ryder's theorem for surfaces, which tells us when it's a so I mean, if you plug in the length of Z equal to 1, you get criteria for L to be globally generated. And if you plug in length equal to 2, then you get criteria for L to be very ample, Kx tensor L to be very ample. And so, I mean, then basically I call this the theorem, but it's really basically a corollary of the previous theorem. Although with, so X is threefold L ample. At first it follows that Kx tensor L to the 4 is globally generated. And then the same thing holds so, I mean, this would not be true for X equal P3 and L equal O of 1, so I need an additional qualification. Maybe I need that the volume is strictly bigger than 1, then instead of being possibly equal to 1. And then we get that Kx tensor L to the 6 is very ample. And actually, Fujita's conjecture claims that Kx tensor L to the 5 is very ample. And we almost get this statement, and we get that Kx tensor L to the 5 is very ample unless, I mean, somehow what's the first possible restriction you could think of for the first possible obstruction for this not to be very ample? I mean, there could be exist a curve so that the restriction is not very ample. And really, that's basically the only restriction, and we can make this even a little bit more precise. So unless there exists a curve C such that Kx tensor L to the 5 restricted to C is not very ample of degree and of degree 2 times the genus of C. So really the maximum possible degree where you could have a not very ample line. And
so this is all conjectural in your conjectural.
Yeah, so this is all conjectural. Okay, and I mean basically this comes from assuming these other numerical conditions, then we can show that L tensor, the ideal shape of this curve, is the only possible destabilizing subobject. And then somehow using this, we can restrict it to this very special case. Okay, so let me stop here. Thanks.
Any questions?
Michael Douglas and people have written down various inequalities for sheaves on Calabi-Yau threefolds to do with, I'm not sure what exactly, but some conjectures back 2 or 3 years back. I mean, is this sort of related to that?
Yeah, they reformulated as existence results instead of really inequality for all slope stable. And I mean, from this picture, one has to wonder whether their statements should really be about these tilt-stable objects rather than slope-stable vector models. I mean, if I understand the argument correctly, they say, well, here there's a singularity of the space of Fritzl stability conditions, so the central charge of some stable object has to go to zero. But somehow, for me, there's no reason why these should be slope-stable vector models. I mean, of course, they might have more reasons.
But there's a connection between the inequalities that they write down.
Not directly, no. Yes,
sir. So, even in simple cases, that what happens in dimension 4, is there a sensible 3-tilt picture?
Yeah, I mean, conjecturally, you could do it in n minus 1 step tilt, n minus 1 fold tilt on it. But then, I mean, somehow you have to prove these n minus 1 Bogomolov-Giesecke inequalities.
And can you say anything about how are you thinking about trying to prove this? I mean, does the category B have any good properties about restriction to general hyperplanes?
One possible attack would be to use the result on P3 and then somehow go to finite covers using take a tilt-stable object upstairs, push it forward to P3, look at the filtration factors. I don't know. I mean, for some, it seems maybe most approachable for Abelian threefolds because there are many of these projectively flat vector models. And possibly it's enough to just check whether an object is. So, I mean, if an object is not destabilized by any projectively flat vector model, then maybe it's already satisfies this inequality. It seems very plausible, but then, yeah.
Okay, should we thank Aaron again?